your service area spans parts of three states, you're bound to find some interesting and unique commodities along the way. In Wisconsin, that commodity might very well be ginseng. Hello everyone, I'm Adam Albrick with Ag Country Farm Credit Services, and this is the Rural Perspectives Podcast. We're joined today by Bob Kaldunski, president of the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin. Welcome to the podcast, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Ginseng is an extremely interesting crop, and chances are good that it's foreign to many people listening to this podcast. Bob, could you paint a visual for those listening along? What does this plant look like, and what are some of its physical characteristics?
Yes, it's a unique plant. It's a plant that, unlike the other commodities that the country is familiar with, corn or beans or any of those, this is a crop that takes minimally 3 years to 4 years to mature. So what's unique about it is we harvest the seed, and then that seed is actually, we call it stratifying. You depulp it, you take the pulping off, and you let it go through a freeze process or a cooling process. Then you plant it, and it goes through another season of frost. And then that year, then that seed germinates. And you have a small plant that's probably anywhere from 3 to 4 inches tall with a couple of leaves on it. The plant is very sensitive to sunlight, so we have to have a shade cover on it. And it's also the disease, moisture, so we monitor those things. And the plant then in fall goes dorm, and then it comes back a second year. And now we have a two-stem plant, a broadleaf. It will shoot a little bit of a stem up with blossoms, so we'll get some seed on those plants. And then every year that root will triple in its size and density. And then it goes dorm that particularly that fall again. Then in spring, comes back as a three-year-old plant. And that would be the first year that we would harvest this plant. And then this plant would have three stems on it. It would be anywhere from 12 to maybe 18 inches of height. And then that root would be the first year that would be marketable root. So kind of a dark green plant. Again, it's very sensitive to sunlight and moistures. The plant itself likes moisture, but the root itself, like any other commodity, kind of like a potato, too much is not good for it neither. So you'll see it, the structures being wood or cloth in the countryside.
Now Wisconsin, and even more specifically here in Marathon County, is by and large the leader of ginseng production in the United States. What makes this area the right spot to grow this crop?
The thing that makes it quite unique is one is the latitude that we are, the 45-90 mark. It's the temperature, it's the cooler nights, the warm days. And the other thing that makes it unique here to this region is the mineral deposits that the glaciers have left here. It gives us that bitter taste, that root that the consumer likes and recognizes as Wisconsin ginseng. And with that, the cooler nights and the warmer days, the plant grows during the day, and at night it cools or it respirates, it relaxes, and we get what's called a gesticide in the root, which is the active ingredient that is the bitterness that the consumer wants and recognizes as a healthy part of the root.
There are different types of ginseng grown around the world. As you just kind of described what kind of sets apart the Wisconsin ginseng from other varieties, what are the other varieties like?
The other varieties, like Wisconsin root is a Panax quinfolius, and the other ginseng is Panax. And the differences that we see and through sampling and our testing, the Wisconsin ginseng again is bitter. The Panax would be the Canadian or it can be a China ginseng. Those are a little softer, a little milder tasting. And the gesticides typically are lower in those roots. Our gesticides higher. And then there's a Korean ginseng. That's a little different again. That's is root. It's a more of a heating root, like the Wisconsin root's considered to be a cooling root, but yet a stimulant. So it's like a caffeine without the down. You don't get the big kick, you don't get the extra boost, but you don't have the down part of it. So the Wisconsin ginseng again is going to be harder. It's going to be a little more bitter. The Canadian root, the China root is going to be a softer, more mellow root. Again, the Korean then is a different category itself again, and it's more of a heating root, that is.
You mentioned a little bit about the growing season before, but let's just expand on it a little bit. One neat thing is, of course, ginseng, as you mentioned, requires a lot of shade. How do farmers go about giving the plant that much shade?
There's two methods of growing it. One is the older, the wood, the lath, how we make, we call them sections or crates. And we put up structures that hold these across the top of the bed, roughly 6 to 7 feet in the air. And we make rows, 6 foot centers, pad drive-throughs. And then there's also the plastic structures that are put up that have cabling systems, and the shade is pulled across the top. And then you drive through, and typically those are a little bit wider structures where you drive through. The plant grows the same. There isn't any difference. Then there, we do have woods grown, which they do take opportunity, or they take advantage of the woods canopy and grow the ginseng there. But and again, there that crop is, the growing season is a little shorter because of the nature of the leaf and stuff, and all the competition in the forest or the woods. But by far, the cultivated ginseng is the largest.
You mentioned it takes 3 to 4 years to really cultivate the ginseng. What does the average yield look like upon harvest?
It's increasing. A number of years ago, 2,000 pounds an acre was considered a really good yield. Now it's average. I believe the industry's average yield here is still well below 2,000 pounds. It's a very difficult crop to manage. There's more art than science to it. And some of the things as of late that some of the growers are running across is, you know, ginseng cannot be, I should say not cannot be, but does, to be replanted, doesn't do very well. So you need to have virgin or new soil always. And some fellows are coming across areas that have been planted maybe 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago, and people kind of lost track of who was there or what was planted, and they're finding out when they plant. So typically a ton an acre is kind of an average number you shoot for, but our industry is well under that yet.
Just for perspective, what's the average size of a ginseng operation around here?
I believe the average acreage is, I think when you take the large farms, you take the small farms, you put them all together, it's like 4 acres. We have, I believe, about 8 of our growers produce about 70% of our ginseng. So we have some larger producers, and they're all family farms. They're families, individuals, and everybody else. The majority of the industry, it's a secondary income for them, or a secondary job. They have another job. And that's kind of the way it's been. Dairy farmers were the ones that really produced it through the years. So they dairy farmed and they raised ginseng. It kind of went hand in hand. And now with the dairy farms being on the downside a little bit, people are taking second jobs. But there are a number of producers that's their sole livelihood.
What I think is the most fascinating part about growing ginseng is something that you just touched upon. It's that replant issue. I've read about it, I've studied it, and it appears that most of the time you can't successfully replant a ginseng plant in the same spot. When you think about that, that kind of defies the laws of nature, with most living things wanting to reproduce and survive, and this kind of blocks future generations from coming about. So have they identified what it is about the ginseng plant itself that leads to this phenomena?
No, not as we know it. We do have a company that's looking at it, that they feel that they can crack that mystery. You know, Canada has done some research on it and says they have had some success. But no, we don't know. And I'm not sure if it's real high on a priority yet. There is a lot of land available. And being Marathon City, being the central location of ginseng, you know, the area where ginseng really was born, or Hamburg, Marathon, it has moved out a little bit to the outskirts, but there still is a lot of land available. So right now it's not real high on the list, but we are looking at it and trying to figure out what it is.
And of course, there's no type of GMO seed or crop within the ginseng industry at this point.
No, there's not. And I guess at times we kind of wish there was, but the way the crop is, the way it grows, as slow as it is, you know, corn and beans, you can cycle that pretty quick. With the ginseng being at minimally 3 years, how it's picked and how it's grown, germinates, it's considered a wet seed versus like corn and beans being a dry seed. So you have a hard shell on the outside and you've got a wet embryo on the inside. It's very difficult to do that.
And again, we are speaking with Bob Kaldunski of the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin. Bob, if you go to the average grocery store, odds are good you won't just see a ginseng plant for sale. How is this crop marketed?
There's a number of ways. There is some fresh root that is sold. The fresh root, typically it's harvested one day and shipped or a few days cooled and shipped to a consumer in the United States. There is a little bit that's exported, but it's very minimal. Majority of the crop is harvested, and then it is, we go through a cooling process. a washing and then a called basically a packaging process, being barrels. There are a number of farms of people that are processing their rut into packaging, you know, maybe slices or if it's a certain type of a prong or a chunk. But 95 to 99% of the crop is being sold in a bulk form. We have Asian buyers that do come and look at the crop. We've got purchasers that are buy the crop for the Asian consumers or the buyers. With the 20 years ago, we didn't have technology, so we had a lot more Asian buyers come and visually. Now there's a lot that can be done with internet cameras, pictures sent, so they can view those roots and the barrels. Different roots have different markets, so typically they're harvested, processed, meaning cleaned up, and then barreled, and then the Asian buyer comes and buys.
Could you expand a little bit more about that relationship with the foreign buyers? What's it like doing business with other cultures? I mean, we're used to agriculture here in this country, but obviously there are different elements within different societies.
It's very interesting. Thinking myself, I've been in it for 35 years, which isn't a lifetime, but it's been a number of years. They come, they like to barter a little bit. And like anybody, you know, they always want to buy cheap and you want to sell high. So you always got to find a medium in there. And sometimes there's a language barrier, but they're pretty good. They usually have somebody that can translate for them and for you. It's really a neat experience to work with, they said, a different culture and to be part of something that they value. To us, it's a root. We grow it. It's a lot of work. It's labor intense. But for them to come in and want to buy something at such a price or, you know, it's such a value, it's really neat to work with them. But understanding their culture, like they like to barter a little bit, it's kind of fun. But at the same time, it's rewarding. It's neat to be, again, part of something that has a value. And it's not really hooked up with any commodity in the government, like corn and beans. So, and the other thing is that with their culture, honor, a handshake, is there's no written contracts. If they're going to purchase your root, you come upon a price or a market that you want, it's a handshake. And they honor that handshake. And if the market fluctuates or changes, it's still, they honor it, it's a handshake. So it's an industry that there's a lot of respect for each other, and also that handshake is honored. That handshake, that's a deal, and you don't back out of it.
Have you heard from the producers of this association? Let's say they grow ginseng, but they also grow these other crops. Have you gotten any sense of if they like dealing in ginseng with foreign markets at all a little bit more? Or
I think, yes, for the most part, the farms, and it's a small group of farms. You could go back 30 years ago or 25 years ago, we had up to 1,100 producers or growers. Things in the market changed. Canada became a supplier, and just different things, mechanisms in the governments and stuff, and too much rut on the market. The price had dropped, and it was very tough to make a living or support the crop itself. So the industry really thinned out. Now we're down to 180 growers. Have learned a lot with the markets, understand a little bit more, do a little more market research, so we kind of are more in tune with the consumer wants. So the other farmers, they enjoy it as much also. It is, again, it's a crop. It's not like a corn and beans where it's posted, this is the price. And I think what drives a lot of the farms is just a challenge growing this crop. And, you know, like a corn and a bean, you can purchase a modified or a genetically improved, maybe not even so much genetically improved, but a bean or a corn plant or even a tomato or anything that's going to give you this kind of a crop. Ginseng, it's up to your soil. You may have a chunky root, you may have a long root, you may have a prongy root, and it's always the challenge to produce a crop that has got a high value. And the guys enjoy that, and in fighting with Mother Nature.
Yeah, fighting with Mother Nature is not just specific to the ginseng. That's a farming thing in general. But so a lot of people will back you up on that. But back in September, you held the International Wisconsin Ginseng Festival in Wausau. How do events like this help your industry?
Just a little history on that. The state, or being the governor and the Department of the Tourism, had contacted us or a couple years ago, and we were not really in favor of this because it's in a very busy time of year. And these festivals a lot of times just suck a lot of energy and time and stuff, and I just weren't sure if we wanted it, but they said we were going to have it, so we went along with it. Looking back now, it was one of the best things that happened. Our board, ourself, we brought in 30 different delegates from across the Asian market, be it Singapore, Japan, the China, the provinces there, Hong Kong. We brought in 30 different distributors or buyers, along with other companies that had brought in many of the people, so different purchasers or Asian. And they brought them to our industry. They see where the root is growing, how it's processed, just a better understanding between the two of us, face-to-face versus the internet. And we're proud of our industry, how our root is. China has tightened their MRLs up, so maximum residue levels. So a lot of root cannot make it into China because of the residues that are in the root from soils, from past crops growing. We've done a lot of work through the last 20 years of getting our root where it makes it to China. So it brought these people here to see our industry and highlight it. And just even, it's funny, you know, we're the ginseng capital of the world, basically. And yet you can go 10 or 12 miles and there's people that really don't understand it or know it. And you would think being such a prominent thing that, but so it brought the ginseng to the American people, the local people also. So it was very good. It really was beneficial for the industry.
For those interested in possibly growing ginseng, what tips or advice would you have for them?
It's a very expensive crop to get started in. You've got investments of 3 years if you continually, but your materials, your seed, things like that, you're going to have close to maybe $15,000, $20,000 invested per acre just to get started in it. You need to have a partner or work with a grower, somebody that understands it. Like I said, it's more of an art than a science. You need to have some resources, and those resources would be things that the board puts out. There's literature, our researcher team. We have field days, attend those field days, and just kind of partner or have a relationship with some growers and have that relationship where you can have open dialogues on practices, what they do, and there isn't a template that this is the way you do it, but basically you just need to communicate and have relationships with other growers.
If someone wants to get more information about ginseng or your board, how do they go about doing that?
They can stop at the ginseng board here in Marathon, Wisconsin. We do it on our website. Just go to Ginseng Board of Wisconsin, and you can log into there or just come up. There's information. There's a way to contact information on there, and we can get a hold of them and get them started with that.
Well, Bob, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today and learning all about ginseng. So thanks for coming aboard.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's Bob Kaldunsky, president of the Wisconsin Ginseng Board. That's a wrap for this edition of the Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To find out more about us, please visit www.agcountry.com.